Okay, everybody, welcome back. It's another Tuesday talk. It's been a while. We decided to reduce the frequency of the talks, you know, just so we could get the audience, you know, in on quality discussions and whatnot. So today I have a wonderful, wonderful guest with me. You know, we've spoken before also. Sabahat is here with us. She does a lot of stuff, including life coaching. She's a master practitioner at NLP. And a whole bunch of other stuff. She does Reiki stuff also. I love that stuff. I tried it out for the first time. Rather, I knew about it, but like my friend who's a Reiki, like trained healer, whatever, tried it on me for the first time last week. I don't know if it worked, but I slept really good. So maybe it did work. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But that's what she asked. Yes, what's your issue? I'm like, I have trouble sleeping. So she's like,
well, next time you can come to me.
All right, so why don't you go introduce yourself a little bit more. Today, what we want to talk about is, you know, essentially managing stress, anxiety. We've all been dealing with it thanks to COVID, which I am now, like, totally fed up with. And, you know, like, it's enough, man, enough. Like, I remember I was living in Virginia for a while, and the first time it snowed, I was like, oh, man, it's so nice. Look at how nice the snow is. Day two, oh, my God, look how nice the snow is. Day five, I'm like, please turn it off. I've had enough. This is horrible. Yeah. The roads are icy. No. I can't drive. I can't walk. I can't do nothing. So now I've reached that point with COVID. Like, enough. Just please, like, just turn it off. So please, I talk too much. Sabahat, please go ahead. If you could just quickly give us an intro and then let's just get to it.
Sure. My name is Sabahat Ahmed. I am a transformation life coach. I am the founder of Ashmir by Sabahat Ahmed. I'm based in Dubai. A part of our Ashmir practice is in the UK, where my son is managing that side. I'm also an HR consultant. In addition to life coaching, I take kind of an integrated approach, like you just said. I'm a master practitioner of NLP and hypnotherapy. I do a bit of Reiki. I have qualified up to level 2. I'll be doing my level 3 in about 2 weeks' time. So that's where I am. I'm also an HR consultant, so I work full-time with another company. And Ashmir and life coaching is my passion, so to speak. So I do it in my own time over the weekends, in the evenings, and help as many people as I can. That's me.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you so much. I think let's just jump into it. Talk to me about stress.
Stress, everybody knows what stress is. Like you said, we're so used to stress, especially in this year. COVID has really made us aware of what stress is. And, you know, it's kind of a word that everybody seems to know, but nobody seems to understand. And I think that's where we come in, and that's where I wanted to focus today's conversation on, was that what is stress? People come to me and say, I want to get rid of anxiety, or I want to get rid of stress. And I say, why? You know, a little bit of stress is motivational, actually. It's our body's natural fight or flight mechanism. So if I take you back to the prehistoric times, when the cavemen were only supposed to go out, you know, hunt, bring the food home. And if they were faced by a lion or a bear or somebody, and they would suddenly have this adrenaline rush, and they would say, okay, I'm going to fight this and take my food home, or I'm going to run and save my life. So it was a natural mechanism. Now, in today's world, the mind does not recognize the different stress triggers that we are exposed to. The mind is still very primitive, and it still recognizes stress as stress, regardless whether the stress is coming from the lion, or is it, if it's coming from work, life, you know, other kind of negative self-talk or any previous experiences and so on. So it doesn't matter what the stress trigger is, the body's response to stress is the same. The moment you will see danger, the moment you will see an unexpected situation, your body will start reacting and you will get your stress chemicals, stress hormones shot up, your adrenalines, your dopamines, your norepinephrines, you name it, they will all rush up, and so the levels will increase. When the levels will increase, your body will automatically go into a fight or flight mode. And that's what stress. How do we see that? You know, first of all, some people maybe as soon as they face anxiety or an anxious attack or something that causes panic, they may experience rapid breathing, fast heart rate, or they may start experiencing breathlessness or palpitations or like a heartache kind of a burn. So there are different things in which it manifests. But people think that they're having a heart attack. So it's that kind of a feeling because it's very, very sudden. So that is your anxious level. That is your level one stress. It can come and go, but if it's not managed properly, then it will go into a stress level two, which is a resistance stage. That's where there is constant frustration, aggression, anger bouts, reactions, sleeplessness. So different things start manifesting. And if that stage is not managed, then it goes into level three, which is your depression stage, which is the highest stress level. In that condition, people don't even want to get out of bed. It's a constant doom and gloom state, the black mood, which doesn't let people operate in a day-to-day, on a day-to-day basis. So when the stress starts interfering with your normal day-to-day functioning, that is when it becomes really critical. But it can be avoided if it is managed at the beginning. So when your body is constantly on a seesaw, it needs to be brought down so there is a balance. When that balance is missing, that's where the problem stops.
Samad, I hear you on this. I think the thought that popped into my head, and you talked about how whenever we're in a situation, our natural body's defense is, either we're fight, flight, freeze type of reaction that we have, and how stress causes all of these issues. But I know a lot of times, I have a lot of friends actually, who when there's nothing wrong with them, there's nothing, everything is going good, there's no issues, there's no worries, they're stressing about the fact that there's no worries or there's no issues. Is that part of the same type of cycle that we're getting ourselves into? That, hey, I'm worried about having nothing to be worried about because if everything is good now, disaster is going to happen. Or that is that a mindset issue, or is this some sort of stress cycle that we've kind of gotten ourselves addicted into?
It's a combination of both, actually. So everybody has a different personality type. Everybody has a different threshold to deal with stressful situations. And sometimes, like you said, when we have everything going right, there is a bit of a mindset that something's about to happen. And that could be based on your previous experiences. It could be based on the, of course, over the years, from the time we are conceived, we are absorbing these experiences and we create this perception of how the world should be. So if something is not happening the way that we've perceived it to be, that is a cause for concern for us, even though there may not be a cause for concern. So the key to this is that how do we train our mind? How do we use the power of our own mind to create a balanced outlook to life that can help us deal with situations like this? If somebody is thinking that, oh, everything is right and I'm still stressed, that is a negative self-talk that they are, getting themselves involved in, that is ultimately going to add to the stress levels. Because when you're thinking that, your stress hormones are kicking in anyway.
I hear you on that. Let's go back to triggers. So is it always trigger-based, or is it habit-based, or is it a combination of both?
It is a combination of both. So triggers are there. Let's say a trigger has happened 7 years ago. So my brother passed away 7 years ago. That was a trigger for stress. If I do not manage that trauma, or I don't manage that, that immediate impact on my state of mind that occurred at that time, it can then continue to affect me over the years and it becomes unmanageable at some point. So the moment, so the reasons could be any. It could be trauma, it could be fear, it could be a loss, grief, bereavement, relationship breakdown, heartbreak. Reasons could be any, but sometimes we think we are strong and we think that we've dealt with that situation, but the impact of that situation is still deeply embedded. So it will come up when, your subconscious mind is a very, very powerful piece that you have. It's ultimately your friend. So the subconscious's job is to protect you. The subconscious mind is your best friend. It is kind of on an auto mode. So every time a similar situation or a similar trigger occurs, before it even occurs, based on your previous experiences, your subconscious will trigger an automatic behavior to say, stay away, or start giving you anxious attacks or palpitations or body aches and say, oh, you don't want to get into this situation because it's going to cause you an issue like it did 10 years ago or like it did 5 years ago. So every experience that you have went through is deeply embedded in your subconscious mind. It's registered there. And it is driving the behaviors that you see now. So the way we react to situations, the way we deal with situations is all based on how we have learned over the years.
Okay, I hear you on that. And it makes me think of something. And I guess what I'm ultimately going to try to get to is try to figure out which of the two solutions would be the correct solution. Our bodies are, I think, designed to help us forget. And I remember reading this a very long time ago when I was expecting my first kid, that, you know, during childbirth, a woman's body produces chemicals that helps her forget. Because, you know, I was in the room. I would never have a second kid ever in my life. So more power to the woman. I'm telling you, some things are just, thank God I'm a guy. But you know, just taking away from that concept, a lot of times when we go through a bad experience, you know, this is perhaps part of our upbringing where we're just told, you know, toughen it out. It's okay. Give it a couple of days. And then our minds just decide to block it. But if it's going to exist in our subconscious and come back again and again as a trigger, so what's the strategy? Do we kind of just suppress it more, or is there a way to deal with it?
You can't keep suppressing it. You have to ultimately deal with it, right? And when we talk about forgetting it, memories will never go away. The fact is the memories will not go away, but our conscious mind can only hold a few thousand pieces of information that we require at that moment in time. Anything that the conscious mind does not require gets registered somewhere in the subconscious or the unconscious. So it can go into the memory centers, the memory will stay there. But if you're not able to process that and hold it into your memory center, then it will stay somewhere in your subconscious mind and drive a behavior. A certain type of behavior, all behaviors. So all behaviors, you know, your personality type is different from mine. So the way that you will react to a situation will be different from mine. Mine are based on my experiences and what my subconscious remembers. So we are also in a habit, or we are programmed in a way that we delete information, we distort information, we journalize information. So that is our natural mechanism of processing that information. But that information doesn't go anywhere. It still gets registered in your subconscious. What is needed, you remember. What is not needed, you don't remember what you did when you were 2 years old or 3 years old. Maybe you do. You know, my niece and nephew quote examples and experiences from when they were one or two. And we're like, you don't remember what happened this morning, but you remember what happened when you were two. You know, so it's just these memories will come, will surface without you even knowing that they're surfacing. So yes, there is a way to deal with it. That's where our techniques come in, our neuro-linguistic programming, our hypnotherapy. Neuro-linguistic programming is very, very effective in distorting and disrupting the neural pathways that are causing that behavior, and then reframing your thinking. And hypnotherapy works at a level where consciously you are not able to drive a positive behavior or any behavior. So that's where hypnotherapy comes in. So these techniques, these modalities, are effective in driving positive behavior change from a deeper level of the mind where you cannot reach consciously.
It's very interesting. And, you know, so we're essentially talking about, would I be wrong to say that we're talking about memory management, or are we talking about trauma management?
I wouldn't label it as either. I wouldn't say memory management, but of course, we are a product of our experiences. So we are a product of our thoughts as well. Everything starts with the thought. The thought becomes a feeling. Feeling over time becomes a behavior. That's the basis of it. That's something that we have to remember. So when we want to change a behavior, we work our way backwards. When you're behaving in a certain way, how are you feeling? And how you're feeling, what are you thinking? So once you're able to control that thought, because any thought lasts for about 180 seconds. So if you're able to control your thought, a negative thought, for 180 seconds, you can drive a behavior change after that. So I would call it to be a memory management, because memories are good. You know, I think memories define us. Our experiences define us. If somebody asks me what I want to change in my life, I wouldn't change anything. Even the events that I regret happening in my life, or things that I would want not to happen, but I wouldn't change anything, because that's defined the way I am. So that our personalities, our behaviors are formed by our experiences. So people have this controversy around hypnotherapy and NLP that it is visual imagery. Yes, it is. But everybody reacts differently to it. Everybody has a different susceptibility to it. And it's about what works for you. And in terms of trauma management, trauma is another form of feelings and experience that we have been exposed to. So yes, we all go through different feelings. So the first step I would say is first recognizing, what are you feeling? Accepting it, acknowledging it. Yes, I am feeling that. All you need to do is simply ask yourself, how am I feeling? You know, I'm sure you must have heard that we are like peels of onion, and layer after layer, we have a feeling. So it's about peeling through those layers and identifying actually, how am I feeling? Depression is the bigger umbrella. Stress is the bigger umbrella. Under that umbrella, what is the emotion that I'm feeling, right? And why, what is making me feel that? What am I thinking when I'm feeling this? But at the same time, remind yourself of one thing that you are grateful for. These three simple questions at one time puts things in perspective. But the problem starts because we just keep reacting, you know, we're on this reactive mode. So we keep reacting, and we don't really acknowledge and accept, you know, the thought and the feeling behind it, or the emotion that is causing it. And once that emotion and that feeling is recognized, the next step is reframing that I've just talked to you about, you know, changing your negative self-talk into positive self-talk. If you can't do it on your own, get, you know, use NLP or hypnotherapy or Reiki or family constellations or access consciousness. You know, there are so many modalities out there now that can be used to support you in driving these kind of changes.
So if we're talking about, you know, for, I think the first step, as you mentioned very clearly, is that we have to accept that there is something that needs to be addressed. I guess that would be kind of like the broad
starting point.
Exactly. The starting point, I have to accept that there's something that needs to be addressed. There's something that's causing it, or the root of it, or the cycle of it, or whatever. There's a something. Now, the next step onto that something is to kind of actively pursue it and try to figure out what would be the different tools that I have at my disposal to kind of address the issue. And I think you said something really great about positive self-talk. And, you know, I've talked to so many people over the years, And I keep, you know, saying, like, why do you have to think about it from that perspective? Why can't you try thinking about it from a different perspective? And then all of a sudden, we're talking about the same thing, but all of a sudden that shift in perspective, you know, creates a eureka moment where the person's like, wait, I never thought of it this way. I'm like, yeah, well, why not?
Even if you ask yourself, so what? Okay, so said this. So what?
Yeah.
Do I have any control, influence over it? No. So why am I wasting my energies on it? And I'll give you a very personal example. In the last few months, I have been quite stressed with, you know, working two jobs, you know, kind of growing the business, and with COVID, working from home, change in routine, you know, being on my own because my mom went back after the lockdown. The kids are in the UK. My sister's here, but with the work stress and the time management was totally out. And I didn't realize that, but people around me started realizing that. And they started pointing out that, oh, your aura is changing. You know, the way you're reacting to things is changing. You're becoming agitated. You are, you know, you're reacting in a way that you never did before. You're looking tired. You don't, not sleeping well, you know. And I just took a step back. And these are the people who are going to point out if there is something wrong, even before you know it. So it's important that we don't go into this defensive mode and say, oh, why have they said this or why have they said that? And recognize that they are trying to help. and use that support system to identify what is going on with you. You know, these days people have health risks, you know, people have health concerns, not only about themselves, but their, you know, their families living abroad, maybe thousands of miles away, you know, whether they have a vaccine or not, somebody suffering from COVID, people are losing their jobs, their redundancies, you know, you don't get time to see your family, friends, you're on Zoom, even the online mediums is a stress in itself. You know, so it's about taking a step back and saying, what is it that is actually stressing me out? What can I do to help myself? Do I need somebody to talk to? Can I do it on my own? What are the small changes that I can make? And if time allows, I'll just give you a few tips and share it with everybody. The small little changes that they can make on a daily basis that can help them just slip out of that stressful routine that they are facing at the moment.
Great. Before we get into it, I'm going to go back to something that you just mentioned. I think it's very important to note. I mean, when we started our discussion, I think we had made the assumption that you already understand that there's something off balance. And what you just talked about now is the importance of family and friends pointing it out. And, you know, all my friends know that, you know, with me, you get what you see. I'm straight. I'm direct. I'll tell you to your face. If you don't like it, tough luck. But they know me. They know I'm like the tough love guy. And I've told so many of my friends, I was just like, you know, of course, not in a group setting. I'll pull them aside and say, hey, man, what's going on with you, man? Something's off. What do you mean? I'm like, I don't know what's going on with you, but something's off. So
yes, yeah.
Think about it for a minute. And that's very hard. Not to say. To say it is, you just have to kind of like be ready to get in trouble or yelled at. And I'm okay with that. But it's very difficult to listen to. And I think it's very important what you mentioned. I think it's very important that if you have a nice network around you, and I think you have to kind of put it out there. You have to put it out there that, hey, look, I'm open to your support. And I understand that sometimes that support might look like criticism or, you know, and sometimes it's simple things. It's simple. I've had friends come up to me, Ali, bro, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, man, why do you ask? He goes, man, your beard looks like a mess. You haven't like shaved it and kept it nice in a couple of days. Are you all right? I'm like, no, I'm like, honest to God, I'm all right. I just feel lazy, you know? But sometimes it's these small things that I, for example, did not notice, or my friends have told me, like, man, how did you, I didn't even think about that. Like, you know, like you've been bumming around in the same t-shirt for 3 days, or, you know, like some one thing just feels off, whatever that thing may be. I think you're very right by saying that we have to be open to listening and not get defensive. Because when we get defensive, I think that's the same thing as putting a block. And then we're back, you know, back at square one, and now we're running in circles. Yep.
And that's the same as not accepting that we are feeling something.
Yep. Yep. No, I agree with you. Yeah. Walk us through some of the tips of how we can deal with it. So let's say, you know, we've identified there's something not right, or we have a friend who's kind of pointed it out to us and said, hey, bro, you know, like, check yourself, man, something's up. And, you know, I'm here to listen to you, or whatever is the case. So, you know, tell us what your recommendations or tips would be on, you know, how to manage and deal.
I'm not going to say anything that you haven't heard before, but I'm just going to try and put it in perspective. You know, so I'm sure you must have all heard of the four pillars of wellness. Eat well, sleep well, move well, and think well. These are the four crucial elements of your life. And these can be built on a day-to-day basis by just making small little changes in your routine. You know, having a set wake-up time or a sleep time. Even making that little change can help so much. Like I just mentioned that I've been kind of overworking and the time management was off. And the thing that got affected the most was my sleep. And I love my sleep. You know, I have to sleep. I can sleep 10 hours at a stretch to feel fresh. But I have not been able to do that. So the maximum sleep that I was getting was 6 hours, and that wasn't enough for me. So now by taking a step back and evaluating how I'm using my time, I have managed to, for the first time last night, sleep for 8 hours at a stretch. And it made such a huge difference to my energy levels today. You know, so sleep is extremely important. So that is one thing that we should start with. We already talked about understanding stress response. We talked about acknowledging, accepting our feelings. We talked about reframing our thinking and making the healthier choices. And there was this very interesting conversation I was having with my trainer on the live last week, that it's not about a positive mindset. It's about a balanced mindset. We can't always be on the high. You know, we can't always be jumping up and saying, oh, I'm full of energy. There will be low moments and it's okay to feel low. But as long as it doesn't start taking over your life. And when it does, that is the time where you really need to do something about that. But having some resilience, whether that is physical resilience or emotional resilience, is very important. I would advise, I'm a fitness freak myself. But I would, whether people like it or don't like it, but introducing some kind of a workout in your daily routine is extremely important. Whether you set yourself your targets, I'm going to do 5,000 steps every day, and you stick to that and gradually increase that. You don't have to do cardio every day. You don't have to do resistance every day. Check your happiness index. And if you're above 5, do cardio resistance. If you're below 5, just do a light walk. Just make sure your steps are covered. So that is the first thing that you can do towards building physical resilience. You know, having a balanced meal routine. We tend to have long periods of starvation.
So Bob, going back to what you just mentioned a little while ago, and I think this is very important for people to understand. The objective is not to chase happiness, you know, and a lot of people misunderstand that. You know, we understand there's pursuit of happiness, but ultimately, that's not the default. And if you look at it like, you know, in school, you did the sine curve. It goes up and down and up and down. So if the up is the happiness and, you know, the down is you're being sad or upset or depressed or whatever it is, the idea is not to stay up. We know life has ups and downs. The idea is to minimize the downs, maximize as much as possible the ups. But what a lot of people miss is that center. And that center is peace and contentment. So, you know, if you understand that you're not supposed to be happy all the time, you know, you're supposed to be at peace or content with yourself. And then it's nice to be happy. This is the frosting on the cake, but not the cake itself. I think that's a very important point that you brought up. And I think it's great.
It's the balance that we should be looking for. You know, sometimes we need to rejuvenate. We need to regain our energies to be happy again. You know, and there will be moments. You will only be able to cherish those happy moments if you've experienced the low phase. So it's about maintaining that balance. So on a day-to-day routine, you know, where are you? So just keep, you know, it's all about being aware of yourself. Where am I on a daily basis? Okay, I'm taking a dip. How long have I been there? Do I need to do something to come up, or, you know, I'm okay. So it's you. Before even other people can start pointing out, you recognize your feelings before that. And I was talking about, and for that, you know, it's being in the here and now. Again, you must have heard a lot about that. Being in the present moment, you know, mindfulness. Yep. It's not about, you know, we think about the past, or this has happened in the past, or we think about what's going to happen tomorrow or 5 years from now or 10 years from now, but we forget about being in the moment. And being in the moment, just by simply taking a few nice deep breaths, connecting with yourself, having some stillness time, even 5 minutes, 10 minutes in a day, stillness time, just connecting with the universe, connecting with the nature, connecting with your own self, breathing can just help you be in the moment. And that makes you appreciate the things that you should be grateful for. So practicing gratitude is very important. Being thankful for the little things we have. You know, in this day and age where COVID is around and a lot of people have suffered, even having your health, even being able to get out of bed in the morning, even having people to talk to, you know, being able to put your trainers on and go out for a walk, you know, so we need to remember the little things that we are grateful for. There are people who've lost their jobs. So we should be grateful for, you know, I'm not going to say we should be, we ought to be grateful for what we have. So need to be happy in the little things that we have and practice that gratitude. And one practical tip that I want to give is do a bit of digital detox. Switch off your phones 30 minutes to an hour before you go to sleep. And do not switch them on. And I'm sure your sleeplessness may have a lot to do with that as well. So you need to switch off your phone at least 30 minutes to an hour before you go to sleep and turn it on. Or if you can't stay away from it, leave it in another room. You know, and it's just staying away from that digital device while you're sleeping. Use your power state. So your power state is just before going to sleep and just when you're waking up. And if you use that power state to practice gratitude, to breathe, to stay in the moment, you will see enormous benefits come out of that. So that is one thing that we can all start by doing. And then some finding some me time, you know, doing things that we love doing, we haven't been able to do because of stress. Be creative, you know, you're singing, dancing, playing guitar, or drawing, or coloring, sketching. The other day I went on a resin epoxy workshop, and an hour of that was so relieving, you know, and it was so energizing. So doing little things like that helps a lot.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think a lot of people misjudge the importance of living in the now and, you know, and appreciating the moment. I initially started doing that thing, and I've shared this before. I started doing this a while back. And I'm actually not doing it regularly since COVID because now I'm working from home. But when I was going to the office, I had a little coffee machine in my office and I would grind the beans. I would, you know, pour out my coffee, do the little thing. I mean, nothing fancy, right? But it had like a process, and it would be like all of what, 5 minutes. And then I would sit and then just have my cup of coffee. And what a friend recommended to me, they're like, listen, pick one thing and use that as a moment for you. And a moment for gratitude and appreciate it. And I'm like, you know what? I don't know. I can't think of anything. And he's like, when you're at work, do you drink coffee? I'm like, sometimes. He goes, use that. I'm like, let me try. What could happen? And it was amazing. You know, so that kind of became almost ritual where I would go, I'd grind the bean, do my coffee thing. And then I would sit and drink it. And I made sure not to be at my table. I'd sit on the couch in my office, and like, you know, a small little table. And, you know, I'd sit and it'd take me another, whatever, 10, 15 minutes to drink that coffee. And I would just use that to kind of say, you know what, this is a fabulous cup of coffee. It's nice and warm. I'm enjoying it. Look at this.
Yeah.
How nice is this? And I was shocked that, I mean, if you think about it, it doesn't even sound like logical. I'm having a moment with a cup of coffee where I'm just relaxed. But it made such a difference. The rest of the day rolled over so nicely and so smoothly. So it's very understated. And at the same time, I think it's very critical that people just try it out. And I only did it for a little bit. And then I was like, man, this is surprising. I did not expect these sort of results.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a brilliant thing to do. And you've also reminded me that when these days, when most of us are working from home, it's important to take those little breaks. So after an hour of sitting in front of the screen, just get up, make your coffee, be grateful for the coffee, you know, sit on it in a different place, just walk around. And, you know, and get back to work, it will make a difference. It's just about trying it out. You know, it's tried and tested. Yeah. I can guarantee results out of this.
Yeah, no, and you know what that did was, so aside from the day rolling over so nicely and then and appreciating that moment, what I also realized was that I was catching myself being appreciative of other moments. You know, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, a friend of mine flew in. I hadn't seen him since 7 months, 7 months or so he left, and then he kind of got stuck, and then COVID happened, and airports and lockdowns and restrictions, and I don't know what, and I don't know what. And then finally, yesterday he flew in. I mean, we're in touch, we chat a little, whatever, it's all good. But it was just so nice to see him. It was just so nice. I picked him up at the airport and I was like, man, it's just so nice to see you. I'm just so happy. He's like, man, I missed you. I'm like, I missed you too. And it's like, it's not like a thing I do. It's not my style or whatever. You know, it's like not me, but it was just so nice. I was like, man, this is so nice. I'm just so genuinely happy just to see you. And you would think like big deal.
But my kids since January last year. And when I saw the older one in September, you know, you feel grateful for those things. And then the younger one in November, and it just made so much difference because, you know, it had been, what, 10 months? And 10 months is a long time, even if you see them over the screen, it's not the same thing. You know, so yes, these are little things that we need to be grateful for. Stress will always be there. You know, the triggers of stress will always be there. But what we as humans are so resourceful within ourselves. And we need to use our own power, our inner power to utilize that stressful moment to our benefit, to use that for our benefit, to drive some motivation, to decide on how we are going to use this to make our tomorrow better, to even make our now better. It's about staying in the moment, like we said. So if you can understand how you're feeling, you can reframe your thinking, you can have that connection with your inner self, and you have the potential within you. You just have to search for it. That potential can help you drive that positive, balanced behavior that can help you deal with things better tomorrow.
Sabahat, can you help us actionalize this? How can I put it into action? Yes, we understand I need to identify it. Yes, I understand I need to kind of accept and kind of think about it. And then I need to make the change happen. But, you know, walk me through different ways that we can actually put these things into action. What are like the things like, what can I start doing today? What can I start doing tomorrow? And then what I want to ultimately achieve is that balance that we were talking about.
Yeah, we're almost at like 7:30 at the moment, right? Most of the people will be ready to hit the bed in about an hour or two. Start by putting your phones away just before going to sleep and not looking at the screen. So that for me, if you want to start now, that is the first thing to do. Manually refresh your emails if you need to, switch off your notifications, if you use the phone for an alarm or to listen to audios. If you want to listen to something, listen to meditation, or just simply do breathing exercises and some positive affirmations before you go to sleep. We don't use the word try in NLP because by saying try, we set ourselves up for fail. So I think we always use I can, I do, and I will. So it's about, okay, I am going to put my phone away. I'm going to turn off the notifications. The light is not going to bother me. So I am in control. I am confident. I am healthy. I am grateful. Just a few positive affirmations and repeat them while you breathe before you go to sleep. Plan your day. So tomorrow, if it's planned, so everything that is going on in your head, once it's on paper, it makes such a big difference. And I had, like I said, my time management was off. On Saturday, I planned for the entire week. On the time that I'm going to wake up, every single minute accounted for. You know, including because my sessions are usually unpredictable. Sometimes they get canceled, sometimes they get postponed, sometimes something is rapid. So allowing that provision, but from what am I going to do when I open my eyes to what am I going to eat, even doing my meal plans? You know, how many breaks, how many steps, how many times I'm going to get up? Every single thing was written down on a weekly planner. That helps to articulate and plan your day, so that reduces half the stress anyway. Right. And you know that you realize that you have so much time that you can spend on other things. Right. And then most of people are working, and when they're working, or even if they're not working, their days are full. So once you get some time, introduce some me time, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, doing something that is creative, something that helps you release the toxins from your body, from your mind, focuses your thought process on creative, positive things. And, you know, stillness time, we've already talked about, whether listening to meditation or breathing, whether it's before going to bed or waking after you wake up or during the day, whenever you feel stressed, it helps to release the stress. Introducing some workouts, some kind of movement, even if it's dancing to the tune that you like, even if it's going out and taking a 10-minute walk, taking some fresh air, connecting with the nature, or just doing some home workouts, low impact. I use Team Body Projects. They're very low impact workouts, and they're very nicely done. Anything from 10 minutes to 45 minutes. You can decide how long you have, right? And then when you plan your week, if you plan your meals and have a balanced diet, stay away from sugary foods, fatty foods, junk food, processed food, just staying away from that makes a lot of difference in the way that your body is processing things. You know, most of our conditions, which we call psychosomatic, that, you know, where you feel you've got stomach cramps, or you've got gastroenteritis, or you've got a headache or body aches. The causes for most of these are connected to the way that you're processing stress or processing your thoughts and feelings. So by introducing these little changes in your routine, you would be able to manage these psychosomatic conditions as well. And it has to be consistent. You can't do something one day and say, oh, nothing happened. It has to be consistent over a period of time. Few days, you start seeing impacts immediately. But if you keep doing it and build it into your day-to-day routine, it will have amazing impact. The more you do it, the better.
For sure. I agree with you on that. I mean, we always talk about the power of habit and the importance of you can't, there's nothing, you can never do anything just one day and expect some miracle thing to happen. You have to give it time. And I think a lot of that giving it time is you being honest with yourself. And I keep, you know, when I talk to my friends about, you know, somebody or any habit that they want to change or quit smoking or whatever it is. And I keep telling them, like, guys, look, be honest with yourself. You can always lie and make excuses to yourself. But if you really want to be honest with yourself, you got to give it a fair shot. And we know that one day is not fair. You got to give it, you know, a handful of days, a week, 2 weeks. And, you know, we've talked about, there's lots of data on this and research on how many days you have to keep it up for it to be a habit and how many days for it to normalize and whatever, whatever. And I especially tell everybody, if you're going to be changing your lifestyle to get more active, whether you're going to be walking an hour a day or whether you're thinking of, like, you know, going to the gym, I'm like, man, give it 3 weeks. I mean, 3 weeks. 3 weeks is not a lot to ask. And if you're going to quit for 3 weeks, just think you're lying to yourself and not being honest with yourself. And then that really kind of, remember, we talked about perspective. And then every time, you know, my friends call me, like, man, Ali, every time I thought I'm going to skip to going to the gym today, I feel lazy. And I'm like, man, Ali said, you're lying to yourself. I'm not a liar. I'm going to go to the gym. But you're right. It's important.
That one, you cannot lie to yourself. There is this inner advisor in you that is always telling you the truth. So you can speak louder than that, suppress it, but you can never lie to yourself. So it's about looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, am I actually being truthful to myself? Speak to your feelings. And the other thing is, it takes the subconscious mind anything up to 21 days to learn a new behavior. So we need to allow that consciously or subconsciously. It's the same, you know, when you have fever or an infection, you go to the doctor gives you antibiotic, you will take the antibiotic for 7 days. If you take it less than the time which is prescribed, it's not going to have any effect. You can't say, oh, I didn't get better. I took medicine, but I didn't get better. It's the same way. Any behavior change will take time. You just have to be consistent and persistent and keep doing it. And very soon you start feeling the difference. And I can tell you that with experience, not just my own experience, with my clients' experience, with my own experience, the more committed and persistent they have been, the more results they have seen.
No, I agree with you 100%. For some of you listening, know I'm full-time faculty. I teach. And this is the same exact thing I tell students. I'm like, listen, you're having trouble because you have poor study habits. You need to change the way you study. And you cannot just change it for 3 days and expect an A grade on the next test. You need to give it 3 weeks. And if you've consistently changed your study habit for those 3 weeks, it will become your new default. You got to let it sink in. You got to let your, you know, body absorb it. You know, it's like a muscle memory of your brain. It'll become the default. I mean, just like when you're driving home from somewhere, you always take the same route. And how many times you're supposed to go somewhere else? You're like, oh, wait, I just took the same route to go home, because that's the default. That's the kind of imprinted in your head. Guys, if you've got questions, just drop them into the chat. And you know, Sabahat can take questions. We're almost about 15 minutes out from the end of the session today. You know, continuing on to what you were talking about, I think combining the, you know, changing that mindset and introducing habit to make that modification, I think will help with that balance. And then that balance readjusts the stress and how our body reacts and deals with the stress. Would it be the same? I know I'm kind of like really pushing it now, but would it be the same if you're dealing with a trauma that you have had in the past, or are we talking about something different?
I think trauma is a huge thing on its own. Yeah, again, we see it, the impact of trauma manifesting in many, many different ways. Everybody has their own way of dealing with trauma. And everybody's definition of trauma is also different. Let me rephrase that. Now, what would you consider to be a trauma?
You know, let's say somebody's been in a car accident, or somebody's been in like an abusive relationship, or, you know, something of that nature.
Yeah. So these are, again, triggers. These are events and experiences that you have gone through that have shaped the way that you perceive the world or, you know, in NLP, one of our principles is that the map is not your territory. So the way that you see the world is based on your own experiences. If you have, you know, and trauma, you know, abusive relationships, for example, domestic violence, these are things that are very tricky to deal with, because sometimes people who are involved in the in such situations get so used to it that they are afraid to come out of it, because it leaves a void that they don't know where it's come from, because they're so used to being in a similar situation. That's part and parcel of the way they are. So that is one of the big risks we have when we are dealing with clients with stress or trauma or any intense experiences that they've gone through. Because once you eliminate or you deal with that trauma, there is a void. And that void, unless filled with positive, balanced replacement, can create a bigger void. So I often tell my clients that you need, once you push your feelings away, they're going to come back like a boomerang and hit you in the face. You know, so we need to accept it. That's why acceptance is important. Acknowledgement is important. But at the same time, when we remove those feelings, let's say fear or trauma, once we remove those feelings, then there is a huge void left, which has been, you know, which that fear or trauma has been occupying for so many years in some instances. So that void needs to be filled in with positive reframing. So the principle of the matter is the same, but it's the techniques through which those issues are dealt with and how they are then replaced with positivity, the replaced with happy thoughts, or replaced with positive experiences, or even motivation to do something different. But the basis of dealing with this is, again, the person in the individual recognizing that there is an issue that they need to deal with. And most of the time, they don't even realize that. You know, car accidents, of course, somebody's gone through that experience. Their body has experienced it. Now there's a fear around it. Every time they're going to sit in a car, they're going to experience that fear. That fear is going to generate panic. That panic is going to manifest in stress or panic attacks. You know, so we literally have to unlearn those behaviors so then they can learn positive behaviors. You know, a trauma, for example, somebody these days, you know, especially with COVID, a lot of people have suffered losses in their family. You know, their loved ones have passed away, which to some people has just been sudden. And sometimes they haven't even been able to see them at the funerals, you know, see them off, which is very traumatic. My father passed away when I was 12. My brother passed away 7 years ago. And it was a huge trauma. And I, even though I have managed to deal and heal from it, so healing from is important. So I have managed to heal from it, but I still miss them. You know, they are still part of my memory. They're still part of my life. So that trauma existed. And after dealing with it and healing from it, I am now at peace that they're in a better place and I need to do what I need to do in this world. So I have a purpose to my life. So through our interventions, through dealing with stress, through understanding the feelings and the experiences that you are struggling with, you find a purpose to your life. And once you have a purpose to your life, everything else falls in perspective.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think you're 100% right on that. There's a lot of difficulty, you know, surrounding, especially dealing with grief. And it's not easy to... Our mind does not want to accept certain facts of life, that, you know, life ends. And then especially when it's happened in a tragic way, and I can attest to it. I've got friends who've been dealing with loss of, you know, fathers, mothers, aunts, uncles, and it's very difficult. It's very hard. Please.
I will answer the question, then we can go back to this.
I've got a question. Somebody's asking essentially in relation to stress, and if you got high levels of stress and anxiety and potentially depression, would anti-anxiety medications be something that can help, or are they effective?
See, I'm not a medical practitioner, so I'm not, even though I'm a pharmacist by degree, but I haven't really practiced for a while now. So I'm not a practitioner. I can't prescribe. But as a practitioner of CAM therapies, complementary alternative medication, I would always say that in level one or level two stress, your best option is to try CAM therapies or talking therapies or psychological therapies first before you go into taking anti-anxiety medication. Yes, it helps, but it again, it's prolonged use. You will only start seeing some effectiveness after using it for a long time, and they are mainly they cause sleepiness. So you are under sedation most of the time, and that is how it suppresses the neurotransmission. So there was another talk on my Insta on the use of antidepressants, and that I was speaking to a pharmacist friend of mine in the UK who specializes in these, and there's a lot of information around these. I would not say that should be your first go-to, but in conditions like bipolar, conditions like schizophrenia, where it's clinically, that needs clinical interventions, that's where I would probably say medicines are really important. But other conditions like, day-to-day stress or anxiety or panic attack or fears and phobias, these can easily be dealt with through psychotherapies.
Okay, thank you. We have another question. What would be some healthy avenues anyone could use to find your purpose or footing in life during or after the healing process?
Sorry, healthy avenues?
Yes.
After dealing with...
I'll read it again. What would be some healthy avenues anyone could use to find your purpose or footing in life during or after the healing process?
See, healing process, again, takes a while for some people and it's quicker for others. Some people find that being kind to others or doing some charity for others and supporting somebody else in a similar situation helps with the healing process. But to be able to be in a position to help anybody else, you first need to deal with your own emotions because you are vulnerable. When you're going through a healing process, you are vulnerable. And I would, unless you have a support system around you, like your friends and family with compassion and empathy that can hold your hand and bring you out of that healing, you know, support you in that healing journey, a professional would be your best person to go to in that process because that speeds up the process. And once you are in control of, you feel that you are now more in control of your emotions, you can find some I'm speaking of this from my own experience. You can find peace by helping others in similar situation. You can involve yourself connecting with nature, doing some creative work, voluntary work. It's really up to you what you prefer and what options are available to you. But the sky's your limit. You can do whatever you want as long as you find peace and happiness and harmony in whatever you're doing.
All right, thank you. We have another question. Could it be possible to get healthy and happy by being alone, or do we need relationships?
First, we need to love and accept ourselves before we even start looking for relationships. So, but at the same time, with COVID situation, there has been some researches before that as well, that loneliness is one of the biggest for stress, and the mortality rate also goes up when the loneliness goes up. So there is, of course, we are social animals. We do need relationships. We do need people to depend on. But before we even qualify to be in a relationship, we need to start loving and accepting ourselves. So question to ask here is, what is your own relationship with yourself? How do you see yourself? Do you love and accept yourself? Do you respect yourself? Do you know what you want from life? And that will determine what kind of energy field are you carrying around you. And only then you will attract people at the same frequency.
Great, thank you. We are almost out of time. Bahad, can I ask you to do a really quick 1 minute recap of our discussion today? So, what's our takeaway from our discussions?
See, stress will always be there, right? But what we need to do is use stress to our benefit and use it for our motivation. Use it to understand that where are the changes that we can make that can not only support us, but also make our tomorrow better for us. It's not about being on the high all the time. It's not about being, I'm feeling low today and I'm stressed. Indulge in some positive self-talk. Tell yourself it's okay to be not okay. And, and it's I have better things to be grateful for. What are you grateful for? Practice gratitude. Reframe your thinking. Connect with your inner advisor. Love and accept and respect yourself. And make sure you make those little changes that will help you to build a supportive routine that can help you manage stress going forward.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time out to come talk to us. Thank you so much for sharing. For guys, if you joined a little bit late, don't worry. We'll have the video posted on our IGTV in a couple of days and you can catch it there. Once again, thank you so much. Looking forward to having you back again. And please, COVID, turn it off. I would like to meet all of my wonderful speakers and Tuesday Talk participants in person. Please. This is my new campaign. Please.
As soon as your meeting start, I would like to come and attend.
Definitely. That'd be fantastic. That'd be fantastic. All right, everybody, stay safe. Be smart. Wear your mask. Get vaccinated. Whatever it is, and let's get back to in-person meetings. I'm gonna cheat here and go back to what Sabaha talked about, the pillars. You know, she talked about the eating pillar. I kind of stay on that one. I don't jump to the others. I can attest to that. So I would love to have everyone over for a barbecue. I know I've been inviting forever. Please, COVID, turn off. We have a fantastic barbecue. I'd love to have everybody over. Thank you so much. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.